When did we have those meetings? What year did they take that over?
It was 52, 53 when the expropriation took place, and I imagine a year or so before.
Yeah, they kind of get the people.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to use you good. Well, I don't know where I was on that. But
how did your father feel? How did he react to being told that he was going to lose his land?
Well, I don't really know. But I know that he would have liked to have kept that 100 acres of ground and had it. But anyway, I remember them offering him a price for that. You know, back even then, Jeff, peel spruce pulp was worth around $32 a cord. And that was pretty good money back then. And it wasn't a big deal for a person to cut a cord of that a day. You know? And if you had it. So as a result, that was pretty good money. And they offered him less than $3,000, quite a bit less than $3,000 for that 114 acres. And most everybody did not take the first offer, or, you know, tried to get them to come up a little on it. But I can remember very well my dad saying, well, I'm not going to accept that price. And I'd forgotten just exactly what that was, the first offer. The second offer was just under $3,000. And they said, the statement was, you will accept this, or we will see you in what they referred to as Exchequer Court. And I don't know what that was. But I guess it was just a name they used to kind of, a scare tactic.
Scare you a little
exactly.
Bit.
Exactly. However, I guess most people accepted. I imagine there was some maybe went to this Exchequer Court. I don't know. But he didn't, and so he got the large sum of, I think, around $2,900. And that was the end of that piece of property. And we were still living in Enniskillen. And so he just... But you see, and another aspect of that, too, like the people out through there, he worked mostly out through that area for doing carpenter work for those people through the Enniskillen, Petersville area. And that was all going to be gone, so...
So not only did he lose his land, but he lost all his customers.
He lost... yeah, that's right. He did lose quite a few customers that he worked for. But then he went to work for... he worked for some for the Department of Transportation too. There was a government graduate, Wellsford, and he worked there quite a bit. Him and Patty, his brother-in-law, worked on a snowplow, driving snowplows and things like that. And then him and I both, later, we worked together building houses. I quit the railroad after I got married. I worked for the Canadian Pacific about 8 years, I guess. And after I got married, they started lengthening the sections out, and things was getting a little different on the railroad. So I quit that, and him and I went building houses. All over the place. We built quite a few in Gary, and did a lot of work up in that area. Down La Pro, we built houses in La Pro. We built houses in down towards Grand Bay, Wellsford. We built a house for Dave Cochran. We built the Curling Club in Fredericton Junction.
Really?
Yeah. Ralph Haston and my dad and I. And out in French Lake. We built a house out there for a fellow by the name of Malcolm Burns. We worked together quite a bit. Then I learned out of body work, and I built my own place, and I worked at that for 18 years. So, like, he had to change his work different places. And up until he died, prior to his death, he was working for DOT. He too learned to do out-of-body work and was good at it. He's working at the government garage at Walsford. But the trouble was, the way we were doing the houses was kind of a seasonal thing, and in the wintertime there wasn't that much. There didn't seem to be that much back then. There wasn't that much carpenter work to do. And as a result, working for yourself, you weren't able to draw any EI.
Right.
So he decided later that he would go to work for.
So a lot of your family, though, that lived back, like the three brothers that lived back on McCann Hill, they must have been greatly affected with all the farms and all the land they had back there.
Those were, that was my great-grandfather, though, that they called that. But, well, they were, there was other McCanns, like offsprings from them, like Gerald McCann lived out there.
It still had that land.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Danny McCann, of course, he was dead, but Ralph lived out there, Ralph McCann, and yeah, they had to get up and move.
And where did they settle to?
Ralph moved to Frederick Junction and bought a kind of a farm up there, and Gerald moved up there, Gerald McCann, and then there was Clarence and Alfred McCann. Their father had died, that would be Johnny. They moved to Quispam Sis, outside of St. John, and they just split up and went which way, you know. So, but Patty and my uncle Patty, on my mother's side, Patty Murray, they moved to Gary, and they went to work. He went to work for National Defense as a painter, and Carl went to work for them too, and they had pretty good jobs there, and I guess they made out pretty good. So, you know, there was some bonuses, I guess, in it from the way people handle it. However, there's a difference between being completely expropriated and being partially expropriated. Being, say, we're going to leave your house, but we're going to take everything else. So, you know, that little community down there, I don't think that it ever should have been left there. It kind of isolated it from everything else.
Right.
And I don't think it was the proper way to do it. It just certainly, it lowered the valuation of the property, I would say, considerably in that area. I know I tried to sell my house down there, and it's a hard sell, and I still got that sporting camp for sale, and you know, it's a pretty good camp. It's well fixed up. It's not actually a camp. It's all furnished, and it's got a full bath in it and everything, and I've had it for sale now for a couple of years, and I can't sell it yet. And I'm not going to get anything near what it would cost you to build one like it. But I didn't even get as much for my house as I would have liked to. But anyway, you can't have all this property. And
it's, right.
If it's not an asset, it's a liability, and it's become a liability.
And these things are direct repercussions of having that army line right down through
right.
your backyard.
Exactly. I would say. The Department of National Defense was no way did not do anything for me, I'll put it that way, as far as I'm concerned.
So my next question, question 180 here, were your family better off or worse after moving or having been expropriated, having their land expropriated? I imagine you're...
Well, I would have to say that we weren't any better off by them taking her. Because I'm sure that 114 acres of ground is worth a little bit more than $2,900. I used to think of a piece of property like that, if you had it, it's almost like money in the bank because it's growing all the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not a renewable resource, land. Yeah. And you just can't buy a 100 acres very easy anymore.
You ever get back on that land?
Yes, I've been back on it. I've hunted on it.
Yeah. You probably know it like the back of your hand.
Not as good now as I used to. I you know, it changes, but... Oh, yeah, I knew it all. We had it lined.
Do you suppose that had the Army not expropriated that land, that perhaps that land would be in your name today, that you would still own that land?
Me, myself? Or?
Yes.
Well, I'm not so sure about that. But it would have been left to probably some one of us brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it definitely, in your mind, would still be part of the family, though.
Family. Oh, yes, I would definitely think so, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you ever wonder what, not only in Enniskillen, but all the communities, do you ever wonder what they would be like today had National Defense picked another area in a different part of the country?
Yes, I often wonder that, Jeff. Yeah.
What do you think would have come of those communities with all of the, with the strong farming base and so on? Where would they be today?
That's a good question. I really don't know what the... But you know, commuting back and forth like to Armachtu and to Fredericton. I've worked in Fredericton for the last 15, 16 years. And, you know, it doesn't seem to be a big factor to commute back and forth, even you have to. Mm-hmm. You know, not everybody probably would have been on a farm, but you could still live there and do a little bit of farming. You could grow a garden. You could have whatnot, maybe a cow or something, and still work, you know, out if you wanted to for kind of a supplement towards it. But, no, I really don't know. Like, there was a store in Petersville, and our church was out there, and the hall. And, you know, those kind of things were missed. And the families that lived out through there, you know, I don't think that you'll ever see neighbors like there was out to there. I travel quite a little bit around the country, and I've never ran into people that's as friendly of people as it was in that out to that community. And you know, I'm not just saying that because I was part of them or anything like that. I maybe was one of the most unfriendliest, I don't know, but you know, I can remember my dad and I walking in the Enniskillen Road in the middle of the winter one time. We come up on a bus. We went down to get some parts for a car, I think. And we're coming in the Enniskillen Road, and we're walking by Tim Donovan's. And it was in the winter time, and he hollered us, come on in now. It's dinner time. You just couldn't get by that house, you know, unless you went in. You just couldn't go in and have a cup of tea. You'd have to sit down at the table and have dinner. And there was no escape. That was a must. And, you know, that's the type of people they were.
Yes, sir.
They were just, you know, everybody was that way. I remember I used to take my lunch to school, and I'd go up. My uncle lived just up the road from me, and from the school, and I'd go up there, and they had cows. Carl and Patty had cows, and did all kinds of milk, and Carl's mother, Maggie, would just set a pitcher of milk down at the corner of the couch, and I'd sit there and have my lunch and drink a quart of milk every day. And, you know, that's the way people was back then. They just seemed to be, I don't know, they were different. You don't. I'm not saying they're not around, it's just that I don't see them.
They must exist somewhere.
Yeah, they must exist somewhere.
Mr. McCann, I just want to give you this opportunity to perhaps add anything that you've already said or anything that you may have remembered.
Jeff, I've got my dad's date of birth here.
Perfect.
Arnold Furman McCann was born in Wittapitlock, Maine on November the 14th, 1907.
Okay, and your mom?
And my mom, Marjorie Ann Murray McCann, was born in Northern Ireland on December the 17th, 1915, in a little town called Ballymena, about 30 kilometers north of Belfast.
Yes, sir.
And I just kind of thought of that as we're going through it.
Perfect. Is there anything else you'd like to add? Anything else we should have?
Not an awful lot that I can think of.
On that note, I'd like to thank you very much for meeting with me today and sharing that story. It was a very delightful conversation and very insightful.
Well, I appreciate that, Jeff. I kind of enjoyed it, rather.
Good. I'm glad.
Thank you.
Thanks again.